This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
We're not playing well. You know, we're not playing well as individuals. We're not playing well as a team. We're not coaching it well. All the way around. Not scoring enough on offense. Not stopping them enough on defense. And this is as a result. We have to wear this on our sleeves. They got to be grown men. We're going to see what we're made of. How many people can handle adversity. And this is about as dark as it's going to be right now.
I know we talked to about execution the other day, and it still comes up. You know, I think we just all have to do our job better. So there's no easy way about it. It's, you know, they're trying to keep us from doing our job. We're trying to do it, and they're doing a better job than we are. It's anytime you score 3 points, that pretty much sums it up. No one feels good about where we're at. No one feels good about how we played or what we're doing. So we're all in it together, man. We got to go pull ourselves out of it.
Yeah, Denzel.
It's for you, brother.
Nickel's worth of free advice for Carolina Panthers owner David Tepper. Don't give him the game ball. Give Steve Wilkes the job. You know, don't tell him, hey, this is for you, brother. 1, 2, 3, family. And then when the season's over, you go on looking for a shiny new toy or a sexy head coach that's going to win you the press conference. Steve Wilkes, man. Yeah. Obviously, the salacious story, the sexy story, Michael Holly, is the struggles of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But the story for me is Steve Wilkes, who I always felt got a raw deal in 2018 at one season he had with the Arizona Cardinals.
Oh, my God.
Steve Wilkes.
Oh, my God.
Taking
did he
over,
ever? Did
right?
he ever?
Right? That's understatement of the year, right? Goes in and takes over as interim coach of the Carolina Panthers. Charlotte native Steve Wilkes, by the way. Appalachian State's own Steve Wilkes, by the way. Takes over as interim coach for Matt Rhule. Playing P.J. Walker at quarterback. Everybody's talking fire sale. There's rumors about Derek Brown and Brian Burns and J.C. Horn and D.J. Moore and, you know, Christian McCaffrey's already in San Francisco. And they go and beat the brakes off the Bucks. Okay? So when it comes time for that job interview for the full-time job after this season, I don't care what happens the rest of the year. Steve Wilkes, take that video right there, put out by the Carolina Panthers social media team, play that for David Tepper and walk out the room. David Tepper and Scott Fitterer and whoever is involved in the decision-making process, play that video and walk out the room. Because all the evidence you need that he's qualified, that he can get that locker room and get those players to play for him, get him some good players this coming draft, get him a quarterback, and let's see what this man can do with an actual opportunity. If you're not going to give him the job, at least give him serious consideration as opposed to what Tepper said recently, which was, if he does an incredible job, he can be considered. Sounds a lot like what Arthur Blank said about Raheem Morris, who should be a head coach this year. We saw with the Raiders, who won yesterday, but the Raiders didn't think Rich Bisaccia was good enough, despite taking him to the playoffs last year. It's like a lot of times in these interim guys, the guy is right under your nose. He knows the locker room. He knows the players, whether they're there or not. The guy's right under your nose, but you want to win the press conference. You want to win the headlines. You want to shell out millions of dollars to the Sean Paytons of the world instead of giving a guy like Steve Wilkes a legitimate opportunity to be successful. No, he's a good interim guy. He's good to hold down the fort. He can rally the players, but is he going to rally the sponsors? And is he going to rally the corporate partners? Therein lies the problem with a lot of these owners. Steve Wilkes showed yesterday that he's more than qualified to be the long-term head coach of the Carolina Panthers. Under those circumstances, you're not going to find a more impressive win all year, Michael Holly.
Look, Michael Smith, not only do you have a Hall of Fame headline, you got Hall of Fame commentary on this topic. with Steve Wilks, and I mentioned this before, interim coaches, there are certain things interim coaches can't do. It's really the worst job in football. Yeah, you've got head coach as part of your title, but that interim means a lot of things you weren't able to do. You weren't able to hold your own training camp. You weren't able to hire your own coaching staff. You weren't able to install your system. There are lots of things you're not able to do. And in a lot of cases, as you just pointed out, you're not able to get serious consideration for the head coaching job. I pointed this out. I think it's amazing. It's a product from another time, a simpler time, a better time. And that is Marty Schottenheimer. When Marty Schottenheimer took over for Sam Ritigliano in Cleveland, Ritigliano was 1-7. They fired him. They didn't bring in a new coaching staff. They didn't bring in new players. It's, hey, Marty, you make something out of this. He went 500, just a very pedestrian 500 the rest of the way, but he was able to establish a culture. A couple of names I'm going to throw at you. He said, you know what? We should get a ball to these guys, these two running backs we have, Ernest Biner and Kevin Mack. Let's give them both the ball.
Right.
And that's what our offense is going to be. And he became the head coach. Not only become his interim went from head coach, from interim to head coach. And along the way, in Cleveland, he promoted other people on his staff like Bill Cowher. Schottenheimer should be in the Hall of Fame. Cowher is in the Hall of Fame. These things happen, and sometimes it's not about going outside the organization, getting a big name, getting a great offensive guy or great defensive guy. That somebody on the roster, Steve Wilks may not be the guy for it, but at least give him real consideration. In a lot of these cases, as you pointed out, they're not even considering the guy.
Right.
I don't think Rich Bisaccia.
That's my issue.
I don't think Bisaccia didn't give real consideration. He didn't. He didn't get real consideration.
And that's my bigger issue.
From the Raiders.
Even if Steve Wilks, we know the double standard that black coaches have to operate under, okay?
We know that.
Goalposts get moved.
Yeah.
The goalposts get moved for black coaches. All we're asking for, and all we've been asking for, all we've been pounding the table for is serious and legitimate consideration. Even if Steve Wilks doesn't get the gig, like nobody's going to look at David Tepper like he's crazy if, for example, he gets Sean Payton to coach the team. Okay, it's Sean Payton, for crying out loud. He's got a Super Bowl ring. We get it. We get the instant credibility that he brings. But Steve Wilks clearly has credibility in that locker room. And to say if he does an incredible job, he can be considered. Why does he have to do an incredible,
job?
Why do we have to do superhuman shit in order to be considered for the same job that somebody else could be mediocre and get? Okay, that's the biggest issue. It's like we got to jump through hoops. We got to contort ourselves and go undefeated, as Arthur Blank, I believe, said about Raheem Morris
a couple of years ago.
You know, it's like, why do we have to do that? Well, it's a rhetorical question when I say why.
Well, I know that. I know what the answer is. But for Wilks, an incredible job may have been done already. I don't know.
Yesterday was enough. I mean, how many games is he supposed to win with P.J. Walker, who should continue to start?
This is what you got. Right, but you had Baker Mayfield out. You got Sam Darnold out. You put P.J. Walker in there. You already traded Christian McCaffrey. Who knows how that played in the locker room? You already traded Robbie Anderson. I don't know how that played in the locker room. And it just very conveniently, Mike, I'm not crazy. I'm not crazy. I know the trade deadline has not passed yet. It hasn't passed yet. So very conveniently, the story comes out that they turned down two first-round picks for Brian Burns. They turned it down because he's a foundational player. And they turned it down any kind of interest. There's a lot of interest in J.C. Horn and Burns and D.J. Moore. No. We're not going to just give these guys away. They didn't say they wouldn't trade them.
Right.
They're letting it be known before the trade deadline. So, if you got a better offer.
Come correct.
You got about a week and a change. So, it's going to take more than two first-round picks.
Everybody can be had. There's a price for everybody.
You're doing all of these things, and the fact that you're ready, that you show up to the game on time. Let's be honest. When you're the Carolina Panthers, if you show up to the game on time, and everybody doesn't consider themselves an independent contractor, the head coach has already done an incredible job getting everybody on the bus and on the plane, keeping it together.
Absolutely. Conversely, Todd Bowles seems to be struggling to keep things together in Tampa, as we just heard a moment ago. Is this the part where you tell me that you told me so? Because there is, I mean, okay, go ahead. Because there is a funky energy around this team. There's a funk. That's the best way I can describe it. And I like Todd Bowles a lot, but whether it's the, the removal of Bruce Arians and the elevation of Todd Bowles, whether it's Brady taking off during camp, whether it's all the crap that Brady's got swirling around him, whether it's his retirement, his unretirement, whether it's injuries, but everybody's got injuries. So I hesitate to even point at injuries because everybody's dealing with injuries. Okay. So it's like, I mentioned it, but set that aside. Brady's not playing his best ball.
Not playing terribly. You think he's playing poorly?
If you ask some, I don't think so, but I might be incapable of looking at Tom Brady through anything other than rose-colored glasses, or pewter, as the case may be. So
yeah,
it's a lot of reasons, but something definitely feels off around this franchise, and maybe it starts and ends with Brady. I went off on him last Monday for going off on his lineman after going off to Robert Kraft's wedding the day before, or the Friday and Saturday before. They don't run the ball well. They don't protect the quarterback well. They don't do much of anything. They don't play defense particularly well. That's probably the biggest shocker to me. Maybe we should have seen this coming. What I do know is they started 6-2 in 2020. I know that was 2020, but they started 6-2 in 2020. They ended up 7-5, having lost 3 out of 4 heading into the bye week that year. Didn't win the division, but never lost again, and we know they won the Super Bowl. The year before, 2019, Brady was supposed to be done in 2019, all right? Brady's been supposed to be done, like, countless amounts of times people have written him off and said he's finished, that he's cooked. I'm not about to be one of those people today. It looks really bad now, but in a league where I would say, Michael, 2 of the 3 good teams were off this weekend, Buffalo and Philadelphia. The other one's Kansas City. Everybody else is varying degrees of less bad, okay?
Sure, sure.
And it depends on which week you ask. Far more games are lost in this league than they are won. So I'm not going to say that Tampa's done.
Except one team that we're not putting in that category.
Actually, two.
Less bad.
Oh, it is two. We'll get to them in a second. Two of them, and they're in the same city. We'll get to them in a second. But on Tampa. Well,
so it's three then. It's a third one. Anyway, there's another one. And I'm surprised you haven't mentioned them. But I'm going to say this about Tampa. Okay. Let me simplify it. And why didn't we, when you look back on things, whatever, any kind of mistake that you've made, you look back and go, why didn't I see that at the time? It's so clear now. Isn't it, Michael, as simple as this? You have a quarterback who last year was 44. This year he's 45. So you got a quarterback who's one year older, and doing things. Now he keeps creating these new paths. He can't see the guy who did it before because he's that guy. So this is all new territory for Tom Brady, 44 to 45. That guy, not only is he a year older, that guy retired in the offseason, came back, took time off in training camp, came back, missed the Saturday walkthrough. Okay. You went from Bruce Arians and his winning percentage as a head coach and his Super Bowl title as a head coach to a guy, Todd Bowles, who has a lower winning percentage as a head coach and has never won a Super Bowl as a head coach. Gronk is gone. The receivers are banged up. The team is banged up. I mean, can it be as simple as that? Their best player is a year older. Their coaching staff is a little bit less than it was last year. Say what you want about Bruce Arians, and that they've had some injuries and missing players. Therefore, you got Tom Brady, who's been good but not great, and that Tampa is under 500 in a bad division.
It's not complicated. It's not complicated. Speculate about whether Tom Brady's affected by what's going on in his personal life. And if he is, that just makes him human.
How could he not be?
Okay.
How could he not be?
That just makes him human. But I mean, the wide receivers have...
We dance around this issue because we don't want to be the jackass who says, hey, let me get all up in your household. Let me pull up a seat where I wasn't invited at your kitchen table and be privy to private conversations that are just, that usually involve two people. And I'm not doing that. What I'm just saying, like anything, if something is going on in your personal life, I know men, I know men that stereotypically have this amazing ability. I hear this from my wife all the time. Men have this amazing ability to compartmentalize and, you know, this could be going on, but we are able to focus on the job. Yeah, that might be a little overrated. If things are happening in your personal life, it's going to seep into your professional life in some way because you are not a robot.
How could it not affect you, Mike? Well, that's why they do what they do. Like, I'm not saying this makes us jackass by bringing it up, as you put it. I'm saying I don't want to assume that that's affecting him. Like, on a lesser scale, you got stuff going on. I got stuff going on. But when we show up, it's our job. But it's our job not to let that affect our performance, our little performance on this here screen, right? It's right. Our job, because nobody cares, right? When we show up to work, it's time to show up to work. I don't think that ball looked just fine to me. I don't think Tom Brady was thinking about his wife when he put that ball on Mike Evans just right there. You understand what I'm saying? Like, he's not perfect, and yes, he is human, but my husband cannot catch and block for himself, or whatever she said. No, back in the day.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you going to do the quote thing again? Do the quote thing again. Go ahead, do it. It's so entertaining.
No, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to ruin the show again. I'm not going to do it. But you get the reference.
My husband cannot throw the ball and catch the ball at the same time. Shout out Wes Welker, who had a great drop in the Super Bowl against the Giants, second Super Bowl.
Just because it's on page six, we don't know that Tom Brady hasn't dealt with marital strife or personal issues. I mean, his mom beat cancer. I mean, there's a lot of things that's gone on in his life that he's played in spite of. That's why these guys, we look at them as superhuman, these men and women. You know, that's why Serena Williams is winning majors while pregnant. They can do things the rest of us mere mortals can't typically comprehend.
That's
the only reason I don't default. Okay, that's the only reason I don't default to that affecting his play. If it does, that's fine. I just don't assume that it does, if that makes sense.
Okay, affecting his play and specifically, is he thinking, is he dropping back and he's thinking about his personal situation as he throws a ball to Mike Evans that Evans drops? No, I don't think it manifests that way, but maybe it's preparation. You know, maybe it is.
It's the 11-day absence from training camp.
It's cumulative. So I would never say, oh, and that's the reason he threw that interception. He hasn't thrown many of them this year, but the reason he did that or the reason that this team is not winning is because in this very specific situation, he lost his focus. No, I think it's overall things happen to you and you cannot be overwhelmed by them, but still be affected by them, if that makes sense. They don't put you in the fetal position where you just can't do anything.
And the average person may not see it, but it's a little bit different.
Ooh, can I flip this around? Can I flip it around and say the average person deals with it better than professional athletes? Because the average person, sometimes the stakes are higher for people out there who've got to balance more and they don't have the resources that professional athletes do.
They don't have nannies, they don't have childcare. They don't have a service and staff.
What's my man saying in Poetic Justice? They don't have income coming in. Okay, let's flip it around. They don't have income coming in.
Got an apartment.
Yeah.
Got income coming in. But that's why I said nobody cares. Nobody wants to hear excuses. They are paid to perform. So I think both things can be true. You're paid to perform. You're playing a game for a living. You have all these resources. There are people struggling in the real world with much more dire circumstances than you are. All that's true. But he could also be human. And like you said, not devastated by it, but affected by it.
Not overwhelmed.
So I think both can be true. What's the reason for Aaron Rodgers? Is it as simple as no Davante Adams?
You want to get upset on a Monday? You want me to just upset you a little bit?
You sure. Because I ain't gonna be here tomorrow, so it's fine.
Hey, look, Mike. You know, if they took some time to draft a receiver in the first round, you know, maybe things would be better for a brother. No, I don't know. I don't know what it is.
This is not the day for me to argue with that.
the team is fine. The team is fine. It's just not that good. I think they're better. Not fine
the way that way Rodgers is saying where I'm not worried, everything is okay. You mean fine like just meh. They're just meh. Yeah, they're not the 13-3 teams in the last couple of years.
Those 13 win teams. They're probably not a 13 win team, but they're probably 10. They're probably a 10-win team that's playing like a 7-win team. But if I had to pick, this is a surprise. If I had to pick which team is better, I think they're better than the Bucks. They're better than the Bucks. I don't think the Bucks are not very good. The Bucks are not right now. And I know they got Tom, but not right now, not in a month. The Bucks are not good. This is great. I know what you're thinking.
But again, okay, wait.
I know
what you're thinking. But who is, though? So who's that team that I didn't mention? Who is good? You said there was a team I didn't mention. Who is good?
To quote the coach of both those franchises,
Bill Parcells, you are what your record says you are. Not to deviate too far off this Packers topic. We're still here. But as a quick aside, and we'll come back to the New York. You can qualify it all you want. 6-1 and 5-2 is 6-1 and 5-2. So, okay, Chiefs are good. Bills are good. Eagles are good. Let's say Giants and Jets are what their record says they are. Who am I missing? Who did I say?
Who are you missing? Think about irony. You're missing this team, and I'm bringing them up, reminding you of a team.
My head's all over the place. Just tell me who I'm missing.
Let's see. The great state of Ohio, there in the southwestern part of the state, I think.
Oh,
it's cold.
Really? Okay.
As my
let me load up my guns. Tell me more.
as my late grandmother called that city, Cincinnati. The Cincinnati Bengals are 4-3, and if you look at that four and three, it's really. I know the record and the whole thing, the Bill Parcells thing. He was right 90% of the time. Then there's the 10%. So you think about the games that they lost. They lost the first game in a year where they were able to overcome Joe Burrow throwing the ball into everybody's hands who was wearing black and gold. And yet they still should have won the game because they had long snapper issues.
Absolutely.
Okay, so
And then they lost the second game. On a walk-off field goal to Dallas, who's pretty good. Dallas is pretty good.
Yeah, there's some good teams in the league.
This is the first Monday that I haven't flogged myself about writing off the Dallas Cowboys. Point is, though, Mike, I don't think that it matters how good somebody is right now. It matters who's hot and healthy at the end of the season. Sorry to default to the cliche. I'm not trying to tap out. I think to say that the Bucks. They're not good now. To say that they can't be good, I think is premature. Same with Green Bay.
I'm comfortable saying it with the Bucks. I'm not comfortable saying it about Green Bay because I think there's more there. The Bucks are in a bit of a rut, and it's been there. This is not look what they did against the Panthers. Think about it. Back-to-back weeks, losing to the Panthers and Steelers. So not that Vegas has the final word on everything, but, you know, the two biggest upsets of the season, the Buccaneers have been victimized by these two big upsets. And they haven't been playing great football even before that. So,
Green Bay a 10-point underdog, Mr. Vegas? Are they a 10-point underdog going into Buffalo? I think something like that, close to 10.
There's another game that the Buccaneers won. Where they could have been in position to lose it, but they got a gift from the officials. That was a Tom Brady roughing the passer nobody has looked at as roughing the passer. Atlanta lost that game by 6 points. That call happened on third down. Atlanta's about to get the ball, put them in a position to at least tie it with a touchdown and take a lead with an extra point. So The Buccaneers got problems, man. They got problems.
They do.
And it's not just a bad day at the office. They're having a bad month.
No, they do. I'm not arguing that they've been good or that they're better. You know, like, I'm not trying to put lipstick on a pig here. I'm saying it's still early and a lot of teams have problems. Maybe my number of good teams, my threshold for good, I need to evaluate that because, you know, like, again, with the Giants and the Jets, it's something to be said for just winning these games in a league that's set up for everybody to be able to beat everybody. The Cowboys, you saw what they did with their backup quarterback. They beat, Detroit, a bad team yesterday, but I still think Dallas, especially on defense, is pretty good. I'm just saying, like, to say that Rodgers and Brady are both cooked before Thanksgiving.
Ooh.
Just feels a little premature. Speaking of premature, let's get to one more. You like that bar? Let's get to one more old quarterback who is now been benched. Matt Ryan.
Ooh.
Matt Ryan. I mean, we thought it was bad.
Did you do that when you saw the story? When I saw that story, Matt Ryan benched, I went, ooh.
Dude.
They benched
so
him.
Here's what gets me, man. Here's what gets me.
Yeah.
What gets me is, and I know things could change, but in training camp, Frank Reich, Chris Ballard, everybody talking about how Matt Ryan got several years left, how good he looked in not just practice, but also, in joint practices and what have you, and just really excited about him. So I was at the game, that awful game against the Broncos, where he put together that last drive, courtesy of another veteran quarterback transfer failure, Russell Wilson's end zone interception.
That's right.
I watched Matt Ryan conjure up that leadership that just this week, Jim Irsay was saying, reminded him of Peyton Manning. Jim Irsay was singing Matt Ryan's praises when it comes to leadership. Just this week, right?
Just last week, it
was all good just a week ago. Just last week, Matt Ryan was cooking the Jaguars for almost 400 yards. And this is with an awful offensive line that had to be reshuffled and some highly paid players that haven't been playing well. Jonathan Taylor just came back this week. Defensively, they've had guys not all there. A new system with no Shaq Leonard. I'm not absolving Matt Ryan by any stretch. Matt Ryan has thrown some boneheaded interceptions. Not like forcing the ball, but it's like, did you not see that linebacker sitting dead in your face when you threw it to his chest?
No.
He has completed some perfect passes to defensive players.
No, I didn't.
Arm strength isn't what it was. But what gets me is not just, okay, and he's got a shoulder injury apparently, a grade 2 separation or something. I saw it in passing. Whatever the reason is, okay, he hasn't played great. He hasn't even played well for the most part. Got it. But there's been some extenuating circumstances, and he's hurt. But to say, is Sam Ehlinger for the rest of the season?
Rest of the season.
So is that the Colts saying, we ain't going nowhere, let's see what we got, and if not, let's go get one of these quarterbacks coming out? Do they really think that Sam Ehlinger for the rest of the year is better than what Matt Ryan could have given him? That's damning.
Well, listen, respectfully, Indianapolis should have done that a long time ago. I know, and you have a reference
should've
to it
what?
In your feed.
Ryan?
Look for a quarterback who was more than a stopgap option, who was more than a one and done. Mm-hmm. It ain't college basketball. You're allowed to have him on campus for more than like 2 or 3 years. You could do that. You can have him for like 5 years in Indianapolis, right? But you have a reference there to Andrew Luck, and it's nobody's fault. Andrew Luck decided, this is not for me, and he was a great.
Same Phillip Rivers.
He was a.
Phillip Rivers
up and
retired after that 1 year.
Yeah, great. But we knew that was coming. I mean, we should have known that was coming. Phillip Rivers going from and all his 100 kids going from California to the Midwest. You think he was going to stay there for like 2 or 3 years? Them kids like, and his wife was like, no, not the hell you will, Phillip. You're not staying in Indianapolis. You better come back here. You can't leave me with all these kids.
Right.
That's right.
We grew up in San Diego.
Phillip Rivers, Carson Wentz, now Matt Ryan. I'll make this quick. Indianapolis really knows how to pass the buck and position somebody else as the face of the problem. But the problem is right there with you, Frank Reich and Chris Ballard. Sorry, and Jim Irsay, the problem is with y'all. You got to find a guy. You got to commit to a guy and live with the results. Right. You can't just say, we're a quarterback away. No, maybe you're a quarterback away, but not that quarterback away.
Or it's almost like they just feel like we're so good. But if you feel like you're close, I know Sam Ehlinger beat out Nick Foles, but is Sam Ehlinger going to act? I mean, is he the answer to all your problems? I know one thing, you mentioned Carson Wentz. He ain't getting that job back from my man Taylor Heineke. Because they'd be crazy to put Wentz back and give the aforementioned Colts a higher pick if he plays 70% of the snaps. No, thank you. Okay. This is Taylor Heineke's team, if not Sam Howell for the rest of the year.
We're going to ride this. We're going to ride this Heineke thing out, see where it takes us.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Hey, Mike, how often do you think this happens? A couple of officials seemingly looking to get Mike Evans to autograph their card or what have you. How often do you think this type of thing happens? Reportedly, the league is looking into this.
I don't think, you know what? Am I being naive to say I don't think it happens that often, particularly after losses? Like Mike Evans dropped a touchdown pass in a game in which the Tampa Bay Buccaneers scored 3 points, most players aren't in the mood to go up to officials.
But Mike Evans didn't seem shocked. But Charles, Mike Evans didn't seem shocked. That's why I mentioned to say it probably happens a lot. We just don't see it all the time. And it feeds, well, more than we think. And it feeds into the idea. I mean, officiating, as usual, is always under a lot of scrutiny. This year, especially when it comes to roughing the passer. It's like it feeds into the idea that the fix is in, that these guys, they just did a documentary on Tim Donaghy for crying out loud. It's a bad look, but am I naive, guys, to think that getting something like, it wasn't like they got him to sign a helmet or they're selling it or anything like that. Getting them to sign something does not necessarily compromise their ability to do their job. Is that naive on my part?
Let me answer it this way. So I reached out to a whole lot of people in front offices and coaching staffs, and I was like, is this unusual? Like, I've never seen a scenario like this. And the response I got was overwhelmingly, yeah, that particular scenario where you have officials who are literally kind of tracking someone down the tunnel right after a game is definitely unusual. Now, that said, I had a couple guys basically said to me, like, does it happen? Yeah, somebody asks for an autograph for a kid. There are charitable events, like things like that. There are times where it does happen. Now, in the tunnel like that, it's a little unusual. So my question was, like, am I overreacting here? Is this a big deal? Like, is this like an integrity issue? And the response I got was, It's a bad look. Like, it shouldn't be happening. It's a bad look from an optic standpoint.
It feeds into the narrative. Yeah,
that's exactly. It feeds very much into a fan narrative. It does not help that this is a player on Tom Brady's team, of all things, because he always seems to be at the center of officiating controversies with fans. But overall, the sense I got was sort of an eye roll from most people in the NFL that are part of coaching staffs or front offices going, yeah, not a great look, but at the end of the day, do they buy into this, any conspiratorial aspect? No, they don't. Well, they tend to believe that bad officiating ends up hurting both teams in games and that it ultimately evens out. But, from an optics standpoint, I think everybody agrees it's not a good look.
Charles and Mike, imagine if this is a bad look in a 21-3 Tampa Bay loss, imagine the conversations we'd be having if this had happened after that Atlanta game, where they call the roughing the passer on the Falcons. And then after the game, hey, Tom, or Mike, can I get an autograph after a victory? I mean, that's really when it's out of control. So after a loss, I guess if you're going to do it when when that team, when that marquee team loses by 18 as opposed to wins by a field goal or 6 points?
I'm sure it would have been absorbed differently if it was, you know, an 18-point Buccaneers win than you know, the reverse. But it's – look, at the end of the day, the league is investigating this as, you know, whether or not it's like a code of conduct violation, you know, like, but basically you're not supposed to do this. They did this.
We would never do that.
As reporters,
we would never do that. So it's kind of –
But like, we wouldn't. But let's be honest. Over the expanse of our careers, have we not known reporters
at some point or another
who have asked
for an
autograph?
And how do we look at them?
And we very much
we look at them sideways
in the community. Yeah, absolutely.
And
100%.
And I'm going to say to you, you two great reporters, sometimes I wish I didn't have integrity. Okay? I'm going to slap myself. I'm going to slap myself. But think about this. You know, when I first started covering the NBA, Jordan was still in the league.
Yeah,
I see Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, Shaq, Charles Barkley. I mean, I've seen so many great players, but it never crossed my mind. Why not?
But you know
why?
Why
didn't I go up to Michael Jordan and be like, hey, Mike,
but you know
I got
what?
These J's. Why don't you sign?
Mike. Like. But Mike, and listen, I've spent, and I didn't cover Michael Jordan, but I've spent time socially with Michael Jordan. Rest in peace to the great Bill Russell. Wasn't it Russell
okay.
who said out?
A little
would,
bit of a brag.
He would never.
Let's just go ahead and roll that brag out
little
like
bit.
Nothing.
Little bit.
Oh, yeah.
No,
Michael Jordan.
But I'm saying, like, but the larger point, so I think Bill Russell, right, Mike, was like, he would never sign an autograph, but he would have a conversation with somebody.
Yeah, I'd rather have a conversation.
Or shake
I'd
your
rather
hand.
Shake your hand, was his point.
Or nowadays, people do pictures. In the interest of full transparency, not to be hypocritical, I've taken pictures with guys that I cover. Is that a conflict of interest, Charles?
Well, it's okay. So I will say this. The thing about autographs is there's an element of monetary value. We all know people sell autographs, right? It does.
Yeah.
It happens.
Yeah.
And so to me, I think there is far and away a clear connection between, you know, actual monetary value when it comes to autographs. If you're taking a picture with someone, there's no real, you know, I mean, there's not like monetary value. Maybe there's value in Q rating, which is probably what Michael Smith is always looking for.
Right. Hey, what was that?
Oh, my God, from Charles? I expected from the other side of the screen, not from Chuck.
In my entire life, I've asked for a photo with one athlete ever. Michael Smith, you know this, Muhammad Ali.
And
it was the one moment in my life where I'm like, I don't care. Like, it's Muhammad Ali. Like, this is a moment.
That's what Michael
I can
just
feel
saying.
It's a moment.
I
want to remember
Michael
it forever.
Jordan, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, again, let's go back though to this situation. All of this is different because you're talking about people that are part of the infrastructure and the integrity of the game. And frankly, that's what the NFL cares about, right? The NFL, they will.
Yeah, we don't directly influence the outcome of the game.
Yes, they do not. There's a reason why Calvin Ridley, let's go back to this. There's a reason why Calvin Ridley was suspended for a calendar year and Deshaun Watson was suspended for, you know, less than a full NFL, you know, season schedule.
They do not play when it comes to integrity of the game.
We're in a post-gambling, you know, acceptance world in the NFL, and there is no bigger thing than looking at officials and wondering about officiating. So when you have a situation like this that happens, they take
no
this
question.
Very seriously.
Absolutely. So listen, man, I'm going to just kind of like just open your notebook here. Matt Ryan gets benched today. We're not that far removed from Matt Rule's removal as Carolina head coach. Nathaniel Hackett's seat continues to get hotter. The trade deadline is getting closer.
Right.
What other fallout is on the horizon? Broad questions, 32 teams I know, but what comes top of mind, whether it's a coach, whether it's a benching, whether it's a fire sale,
a trade.
Or people getting traded off,
whatever
you think may be coming down the pipe.
First off, let's talk about the coaching front. I think that, When you talk to people in Denver, do they believe in Nathaniel Hackett? Whether it's popular or not, the reality is inside the building, people inside the building still believe in him, okay? What I think has to be nerve-wracking there is that you have an ownership group that was not part of the hiring process. Remember, he was hired prior to ownership exchanging or changing hands. And if there's anything I have learned in 20 years, fans fire coaches all the time. They absolutely do. If you reach a level of apathy in which people A, aren't showing up, and B, are leaving in the middle of a game that's still the contest has yet to be right. decided, or worse yet, right. at the start of an
after
overtime.
After they have counted down the play clock previously.
Yes. Again, and so when fan apathy sets in to the point where it's not just on the radio anymore, it's now in the stands, it's people just not mm-hmm. showing up, they're booing, they're not
it's
showing up, they're walking
the
out.
Line,
Owner typically, from my experience, ownership takes that extremely seriously. They do not want apathy to set in a way that massively affects the gate. And so if anything, I would think that the reason why there should be red flags up in Denver is like, how is this being processed on the ownership level when it comes to how the fans are reacting? I am not a proponent in any way, shape or form ever of a coach being fired either in the middle of their first season or after one season. I really truly believe if you felt that convicted to hire someone, they should be able to last more than 1 year and you should see it through. That said, again, I would be worried a little bit if I'm in Denver about how fans are reacting to that. So that's the ownership end of it. I would say we're coming up on the trade deadline. When you talk to teams, what's really interesting is you fans, when they hear so-and-so is receiving interest for these players, that is often a team saying, hey, we're getting interest on these players. What we want is everybody know it. Because we're basically putting these right. – it's their way of kind of putting them on the block and not making the call first. Because if you make the call first, you lose the trade. Instead, you just leak it out. You let people know we're taking calls on these players. If you're interested, come asking us. So when you hear that, process it as guys being available. One name I will say that's really interesting to me is Robert Quinn, the edge rusher with the Chicago Bears. Yeah. I think teams look at him and there are multiple teams that think he could be someone who could be an effective piece for them. Not just a rental too. He's got a couple years left on his deal. So at the very least, maybe you get through this season, maybe next season. I don't want to say it's on the level of a Von Miller type, but I think that is how you should process this trade deadline, is most teams are looking for defensive pieces that they can plug in right away and that can work quickly. Always remember, skill position guys, when you acquire them, especially if they're in the last year of their deal, it takes time to acclimate. So not only is it a short-term rental, but it's a shorter-term rental than you really think. You probably don't start to get dividends until into December. So a lot of skill position guys, unless they have additional years on their deal, it's difficult to trade them because it takes time for offenses to work them into the fold. Not necessarily true when it comes to edge rushers who you can use on a positional basis, plug them in, and they can start impacting the game immediately.
You know what, Charles, before you came on, Michael Smith was talking about Tom Brady in 2019 and 2020. We know what happened in 2020 and they win the Super Bowl in Tampa. But in 19, the Patriots, I believe, started 8-0. And then they just collapsed down the stretch. So they right. were a good team. They had the record of a good team, but they actually were a bad team by the end of the year. And I think on the flip side, and I'm wondering if you see it this way, there are teams that are not supposed to be good, like the Giants,
New York,
who are
Giants
six,
and Jets,
who are 6-1, but especially the Giants, it's 6-1. They're not supposed to be good, but you look around at 6-1, then you get to 7-1, 8-1. You're like, I know we're not supposed to be good, but we feel good. Can you see that team reeling off 12 wins? Because I can. 12 wins and getting to the playoffs. Sure.
I looked at the Giants, and to me, their floor is 10. Like, I think they get to 10 wins. Like, I was like, let me look at it as glass half empty. Let me see how I feel about the remaining schedule. I feel like 10 is absolutely, absolutely achievable, especially with the way they're playing right now. Defensively, people better wake up. Like, you know, you, especially the front end of the Giants defense, they invested so much in the front end of it. They get after it. Like, they are paying dividends. That money went to a certain specific place. Those draft picks went to a certain specific place, and you are absolutely seeing it on the football field now. I think the offensive line's playing better than I thought. I think the way they've streamlined it through the running game, Daniel Jones, especially if Daniel Jones is going to start to, you know, continue to use his athlete. I don't want him gaining 100 yards a game rushing, but, you know, it's really cohesive right now. There's a lot of energy there. They're feeling really good about themselves. Again, I think I would actually be surprised at this point if the Giants don't make the playoffs, given watching how they're playing, the schedule that's remaining. I see absolutely teams they should be favored against, at least four down the stretch. And, you know,
If they win in Seattle, I think Seattle's got enough people's respect for it. Yeah. The Giants win at Seattle for that to gain the Giants more respect than their pro-
Absolutely.
I mean, 6-1, you can't deny 6-1. The Jets, though, are you buying the Jets given that?
I buy it.
They seem,
yes.
I like them, Robert Saleh, so don't add me to your pile of receipts. The Breece Hall injury is devastating.
Huge.
But
yeah.
They're winning. Daniel Jones is making plays. He may not be lighting it up passing numbers wise, right. Daniel Jones is. They're not winning in spite of him. The Jets are winning in spite of Zach Wilson.
So here's the thing. Here's the thing about Zach Wilson that I will say, and it works into Elijah Moore wanting a trade. Okay, when you look at the Jets' route tree, okay, and you study like why aren't certain players making these big plays downfield? So we'll talk about Elijah Moore for example. There's no disagreement. He's a very very talented player. He's a very good downfield player. But he also runs a lot of routes that take time. They take development. I think we talked about this before. And I think the problem with Zach Wilson right now is a lot of that downfield stuff, I still don't think the offensive line is where it needs to be able to protect him. I think that works into how he's processing the game. I don't want to say you get happy feet or whatever, but he's moving around a lot to try and avoid pressure. And at the same time, hoping, and again, Elijah Moore wasn't in this last game, but in the past, he's hoping, you know, you're trying to wait for a guy to work open downfield and you just don't have the time to do it. That's a problem. I buy them being a very, very good defensive team. I'm worried about the Breece Hall injury because he was such a fantastically explosive player for them, and really that running game was something to be feared, and you know.
It's really hurt. Is he on Mike's or Charles's? Whose fantasy team was he on?
No, not mine. I would've been devastated.
Not on mine either. Not on the one in the Super League. I have him on another team. Charles, can I have your autograph?
Of course you did.
Please.
Well, I only do pictures.
I'm a fan. Oh, okay.
I only do pictures.
I appreciate long
time,
your work.
Long time listener, first time caller.
Later, Jeff.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Dub Nation is happy, and that includes our next guest, Natalie, the hoopstress herself, queen of NBA Twitter, is here with us. One of the queens of NBA Twitter, one of them. And unabashed Steph Curry supporter. And that's putting it kindly, right? Holly and Vinny Goodwill talking about, why Steph? Why not Magic? Why not Steph, Natalie? Why not Steph?
Listen,
come on.
Vinny,
no,
Natalie Vincent.
Natalie can tell.
I don't know that I have the right to call him Vinny, but Vincent's a low-key hater, okay? Like, I had this conversation with him. Michael, you might be happy to hear this, but I actually think the Celtics are going to make it out the East and get to the finals, and I would love to see a Warriors-Celtics finals. People keep talking about our experience, well, the Warriors' experience, and it almost offends
like
me a little
hour.
Bit.
Oh, I like this it.
This is a big day. This is a big day in the history of BFA. Natalie needs no introduction to our loyal viewers and followers and listeners. But today we are proud to announce that after visiting our family, she'd been leaving her toothbrush. She'd been crashing. We gave her a key. We put her name on the lease. Natalie, our sister from another mister, is now officially part of the brother from another family. You will continue to see her regularly on air. She will take over our social accounts. She will keep us honest behind the scenes. She'll get us right. She's going to take us to another level. Welcome, Natalie.
Yeah, Natalie.
Wow, what a welcome. Thank you.
How you feel?
We're so happy to have
you. Second,
yeah, how
you're
not
second guessing like, it yet, are you?
I'm so excited.
Michael Smith gave me a primer on interviews. How would you describe your emotions?
Oh, honestly, I'm elated. It's like pinch me, you know? It's like a dream come true for me, really. Thank you. I'm so speechless.
That means the world to us. That means the world to us to hear that. For us to be a part of your dreams coming true, that's humbling. That's overwhelming for us. That's what it's all about. But honestly, you're going to make us so much better. You're an incredible talent. Everybody's seen it. That's why you have the following that you have. This is just the beginning for you. This is going to be temporary because pretty soon somebody's going to come steal you from us because that's how it works with winning teams. People start picking people off for winning teams.
That's what's going to happen. But before we get to that, Natalie, I look forward to so many great conversations about the Warriors and whoever.
Yes.
The Warriors.
NBA
well,
in general.
Warriors Celtics
for sure.
But just the Warriors in general and just your conversations. I mean, you can talk about many other things besides that. And one of my favorite conversations recently. You and Karin went back and forth, and you may have silenced him. You may have silenced him temporarily.
I don't know if anybody can silence Karin. Hey, Natalie, it's so nice to have you. Thank you for blessing our show. You've been great, and you're going to be even better. You're going to make us so much better.
Thank you.
Do your thing. Drive this thing like you stole it, Natalie.
Well, it's
your show too.
Well, just go in the refrigerator. You just go in the refrigerator, get whatever you need.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.